You're listening to After the Storm, where the healing begins, on UK Health Radio. I'm Brian D. Smith, founder of Grief to Growth and a certified grief guide, life coach, and author. This part of my journey began after the passing of my 15-year-old daughter, Shayna. So I'm doing the work too. Each week, we explore the journey through grief, not just surviving loss, but discovering who you're becoming on the other side of it. This is where the healing begins. Everyone is in one of three places: heading into a storm, in the middle of one, or standing in the wreckage of what comes next, trying to figure out what to do now. Life is a series of fair weather punctuated by storms, storms that leave us sometimes not recognizing the landscape around us, missing landmarks, and feeling completely lost and not knowing where to go next. Now, I've been in all three of these places. And if you're in any one of these places right now, this is for you. No platitudes, no pretending grief is a problem to be solved, no five easy steps. Just an honest conversation about what helps when life breaks open and the storms hit. Welcome to After the Storm. I'm Brian D. Smith. I'm a grief guide, a certified grief educator, and a life coach. I've hosted the Grief to Growth podcast for years. At this point, nearly 500 episodes and counting. Episodes about loss, about healing, and what we actually know about what happens when someone that we love dies. I live in Westchester, Ohio with my wife, Tawana. We've been married since 1990. We have two daughters, Kayla and Shayna. Giving you a little bit more about my background, I was raised in a religious home. Now, religion did not assuage my fear of death. In fact, it actually fueled it. I became a chemical engineer first. I went to Ohio State University because that's what a smart kid who liked science did. Then technical sales, IBM, some microsystems, and a few other companies. The technical mind in a different room using different skills. Then my wife, Twan, and I built a small business together, Treasure Locks, a hair care product where we sold hair care products online. 20 plus years, that business helped to put our daughters through school, to take care of our family income for quite a while. And now I do this work full time because after 2015, nothing else fit. And I'll tell you why 2015 was such a pivotal point. Now, you don't get from being a chemical engineer to being a grief guide on any normal career map. Something has to break the map. And that's what I'm going to tell you about in a moment. But for now, you may be wondering, why is a grief guide hosting a health radio program? Well, here's why. And I want to make this distinction up front because it really matters when we talk about grief. Grief itself isn't the problem. Grief is what love does when it can't reach the person it's looking for. Grief is the most human thing there is. Grief is not the enemy. Grief is not a disease. Now, the problem is unprocessed grief or stuck grief, grief that has nowhere to go and no way to move. And that's what damages the body. The mind-body connection is real. It's not new age. It's not woo-woo. It's real. Now, if you don't believe me, you've heard of the placebo effect, right? A sugar pill with no active ingredient, and people are given it and they get measurably better. In fact, the placebo effect is so strong, the drug companies, before they can release a new drug, have to test it against a placebo to show that the drug is more effective than just the placebo itself. And why? Because the mind tells the body what's happening, and the body responds. Or take broken heart syndrome. Now, this is a real condition. You may think it's a myth, but it's real. Doctors call it Takotsubo cardiomyopathy. The heart literally changes shape under acute grief. Now, this can look like a heart attack. It shows up on medical scans, and it's caused by emotional stress. And frankly, sometimes it kills people. The mind impacts the body. That's not a metaphor. It's a proven fact. Grief needs to move through you, like food, like breath, like anything else the body processes. And when that grief can't move, when it gets stuck, it doesn't disappear. It goes underground and it comes out somewhere else. It comes out in the form of sleep that won't come. an appetite that's either gone or out of control. Many people in grief will either lose weight or gain weight. An immune system that stops protecting you. Blood pressure that becomes elevated. Inflammation, anxiety, depression. Bereaved spouses have measurably higher mortality in the first year. The widowhood effect is real and is well documented. Bereaved parents show elevated rates of nearly every chronic condition, medical condition. Now, it's not grief doing that. It's the grief with nowhere to go. So, here's the frame for this whole show. Grief isn't the problem. Grief is your longing for a different outcome than what you've gotten. Grief is your longing for a loved one who's no longer with you. The work isn't to get rid of the grief. The work is to help it move. That's why a grief guy belongs on a health radio program. Not because grief is a side topic in health, but because moving grief through your body is actually health work. Now back to why I do this work. To tell you why I do this work, I have to tell you about my daughter, Shayna. And this is why the year 2015 is so pivotal. Shayna is my daughter. Her name, full name is Shayna Elaine Smith. Her name Shayna in Hebrew means beautiful. Her middle name Elaine means light. Shayna was 15 years old. She was healthy. She was smart. She was athletic. She was beautiful. Now, I need to tell you a little story about Shayna so you get a little bit of an idea of who she is. Shayna was always a person who, when she put her mind to something, she could accomplish it, whether it was on the basketball court, on the volleyball court, academically, or socially. So when Shayna was about 14 years old, 13 years old, she said she wanted to go to public school. Now, we had homeschooled both of our girls. We taught them at home for the first 8 years of their school career, 9 years, I guess, counting kindergarten. So when Shayna said she wanted to go to school in eighth grade, we thought this is a terrible time for a teenage girl to go to school. We are an African-American family living in America and one of the most white suburbs there is. Shayna had not been in school with the other kids, and going into that high school situation or junior high school situation, we thought could be disastrous for her socially. But Shayna fit right in. Shayna had a group of friends she met right away. Now, this is a group of ethnically diverse girls, believe it or not, in this white area that we live in. Shayna being the African American, there was a girl that was Greek. There's a girl who was Asian, and there was a girl they called like the plain white girl. But Shayna taught these girls about what it was like to be an African American girl. She was a leader for them academically. One of her best friends was number 15 in the class. Shayna was a class of about 600 kids. Shayna was number 16. One of her best friends was number 15. Shayna would joke with her and say, "I'm coming after you." She wanted to pass her. So this is who Shayna was on June 24, 2015, when she passed away. Now, let me tell you about that day. The night before was as normal a night as you can think of. We had dinner, we watched television, and Shayna, one of her favorite shows, is a show called Grimm. So we were watching a few episodes of Grimm, and I said, "Shayna, it's time to go to bed. You need to get up in the morning and help your mother work." We had a business at the time, and Shayna would help her pack orders. I woke up on the morning of June 24th. It was a beautiful day. I went for the walk that I normally go for. At the time, I was walking, I think, 3 to 4 miles a day. So I went for my walk. I came back. I was sitting at my desk, the place I'm sitting at right now as I record this, and I was doing my work. And my wife starts telling me from the basement that Shayna hasn't come down yet to go to work, and Shayna was late. And she had been texting Shayna to tell her it was time to come downstairs. And that's when I heard a scream come from my daughter's bedroom after my wife had gone upstairs and discovered that Shayna was in bed and wasn't breathing. So I tried CPR on Shayna. We called the ambulance. The ambulance came and took her body to the hospital. And I say her body now. At the time, I did not want to believe that she was gone, but I know that she was already. And I remember sitting there in the waiting room waiting for the doctors to come out. And instead of a doctor, the chaplain came. And the chaplain starts talking to us, you know, breaking it to us slowly the way that they do. And he asked to pray with us. And he prayed, and I remember him saying, you know, he prayed that God's will be done. And I specifically prayed, opposite his prayer. I don't care about God's will. I do not want God's will to be done. I want my daughter back. But of course, that didn't happen. And I remember leaving the hospital without Shayna, without her body even. And I flashed back to the day that Shayna was born, which I remember like it was yesterday. And the joy that we felt going into the hospital with Shayna not being with us yet physically, being in my wife's body, and walking out with Shayna with us and knowing she was going to be with us for the rest of our lives, we thought. And then juxtapose that with walking out of the hospital and leaving Shayna's body behind. I felt like I was betraying her. I felt like I had failed her. I couldn't take her with me. That day, needless to say, was devastating, doesn't do it justice. And I knew in that moment that my life had changed. I knew in that moment that my life would never be the same. You talk about a storm changing the landscape. All the landmarks that had been around me, my faith, my religion, my family, my definitions as a father of two girls, all those things change. How many children do you have? I don't know. Do I have one? Do I have two? Flashing back to before this, I mentioned earlier I was raised in a religious home, and religion didn't help me. So I had what I would call a self-diagnosed case of thanatophobia, an extreme fear of death. I just knew that I was going to die suddenly anytime soon. And I felt this from the time I was about 15 years old, ironically about Shayna's age. And that terror kept me having panic attacks. I was in counseling. I started going to counseling when I was in my mid-30s. And I finally got over that desperate fear of death only by leaning into it, only by studying what is death? What does it really mean? Who are we as human beings on this planet? What does it mean to die? Does anything come after that? So intellectually, I had a fairly good idea. But now death had come for my child, and it rocked my world. So the religious framework had fallen away before. It really didn't hold. The 20 years or so I had done about studying death, it helped somewhat. It was in my head, but it hadn't gotten to my heart yet. So this existing story that I had, if it couldn't hold it, I needed a different story, or no story at all. What I needed was the truth, whatever that was. So for nearly 20 years, I've been working on my fear of death. I've been to counseling. I read everything I get my hands on. While my wife was in bed at night reading novels, I was reading research studies. I pretty much convinced myself of the conclusions that I had come to. But when Shayna passed away, it was no longer an academic exercise. That knowledge that I had in my head needed to move from my head to my heart. It needed to become a lived experience, not just an intellectual exercise. So I doubled down on the research I was doing. I started listening to podcasts at that time. I did the things that I did that I learned as an engineer. Study the evidence, see where it leads you. I read Bruce Grayson, Pim Van Lommel. I read analytic idealism philosophers like Bernardo Kastrup, a brilliant guy who's a philosopher and a computer scientist who puts a framework around our reality that talks about consciousness. I read mediumship research by Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona, the studies he had done on mediumship and whether that was real or not. Consciousness studies by various people. That 20 years or so of material that I had read before, I started taking that evidence and I started building a framework, a worldview, a metaphysics, if you will. Now, metaphysics is a word we don't hear very often, and we think of it sometimes as maybe being woo-woo, as being wishful thinking. Metaphysics is not something that ignores the material world that I'd studied in engineering. It doesn't deny the physics of our world, the chemistry of our world, the biology of our world. Quite the contrary. What it does is it expands it, and it looks at how consciousness affects that and how consciousness plays into the universe that we live in. So it actually expands what we take into consideration. So I started building on the physical framework I had, this metaphysical framework. And the shift that I made wasn't only what I want to believe. In fact, I don't like the word believe when it comes to this. The shift was actually that the evidence was even better than I had thought it was. Faith says, I believe without proof. I never ask anyone to have faith. Evidence says, here is what I found when I looked. As I said, I don't do faith, I do evidence. You will hear me say often that I'm not about belief, I'm really more about conclusions that I've come to based upon the evidence that I've examined so far. Now, I hold my conclusions loosely. They're always subject to change as more evidence comes in. But I know that what I believe now or what I hold to be true now is based upon evidence, not based on thinking, just wishfully.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So here's what I've concluded, that my daughter Shayna passed from the physical form. She didn't just end, she changed form. Now again, this is a conclusion I didn't arrive at quickly or comfortably. I've taken you through this a little bit, these basically four decades of study, two very intense decades from my mid-30s to my mid-50s when Shayna passed, and another decade after that. This took years. And I will tell you, quite frankly, it still takes work. I still have to work on this world frame. I still change my mind about things. And so this is why I do what I do. This is why I'm here. This is why you're hearing my voice right now. Not because I've got it all figured out and I want to teach you, but because I found something of the utmost importance and it wouldn't be right for me to not share it. I feel like I have to give this knowledge away. I feel like I have to give you the evidence. I will let you draw your own conclusions. I'm not here to tell you what to believe or what to be convinced of, but I'm here to share what I've learned. Now, this is a short version of about 40 years. But this is why when we talk about storms on the show, I'm not speaking from some hypothetical situation. I'm not speaking from a textbook. I'm speaking from someone who has lived through a storm and is still living through storms. So now you know who I am and why I'm here. Let me tell you what this show is, and just as important, what it isn't. So let's start with what it isn't. You may be thinking this is a religious show based upon some of the things I've said so far. I want to say this to you. It's not a religious show. Now, it doesn't mean if you're religious that I'm going to push back on your religion. I'm not here to take away anyone's religion. I think religion serves a great role for some people. I want to say to you, if you're not religious, I'm not going to try to put any religion on you. I'm not asking you to have faith. I'm not asking you to believe anything. In fact, in terms of religion, I am pretty much a-religious or irreligious myself. I believe there is a core truth that runs through pretty much all religions, if not all religions. I think they have about 90% of that truth in common. But we add these things onto religions, and that's where they fall apart, at least for me. I am here to take the evidence wherever it leads, and I encourage you to do the same. Now, this isn't the wellness industry. Or this isn't the spirituality industry. You're not going to hear from me, just think positive, or manifest your way through it, or even everything happens for a reason, even though, in full disclosure, I have come to the conclusion everything does happen for a reason, but I'm not asking you to believe that. And here's what's really important. These things either don't work or they actively harm people who are in real grief. And we're not doing that here. That's called bypassing. I am not a fan of bypassing. I am a fan of feeling all the feelings that we have, acknowledging those feelings, acknowledging when things suck, when things aren't going well. I'm not here to bypass any of that stuff. I've seen bypassing do real harm. I've seen people who hold on to faith so strongly that instead of them expressing real emotions, all they do is quote scripture. And they're feeling anger. They're feeling hurt. They're feeling even betrayed. And they can't express it. That's not helpful. The third thing this isn't, it's not a five stages show. The five stages of grief was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And poor Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, she wrote the five stages of grief about people who were dying, who were actively dying, people who started off maybe with anger and then bargaining and then depression and then acceptance. And I don't remember what all the five stages were, but she did not write it for people who were grieving. It got misapplied and it's done a lot of damage. Real grief is not linear. Now, when I was studying grief, looking at some of the certifications I've taken, there are some grief models. Some are better than others. None of them, I believe, are perfect because grief isn't linear. It's individual. There aren't five stages of grief. There aren't 10 stages of grief. There are a million stages of grief, and they don't go in any particular order. There are going to be some emotions that come along with grief that are going to be surprising. Sometimes people feel numb. Sometimes people feel shocked. You might even feel relief about some things. You don't graduate from stage 3 to stage 4 of grief, and then one day we're handed your diploma and we say, grief is over. You're done. You did it. Yay. No, that's not what grief is about. In fact, I think grief is something that stays with us. This leads us to number 4, what this isn't. This isn't a show that says that grief is a problem to be solved. Grief is not a problem. Now, I've talked in the past about healing grief. I'm trying to be very precise with language. I don't really use that language anymore because I don't believe grief is a problem or the problem. Grief is a response to losing something that you loved. The goal is not to make grief go away. The goal is to learn to carry our grief, to integrate our grief into our lives, and to eventually let it change you in the directions you want to be changed. You may find in early grief, emotions like anger and fear and guilt take you in a direction that you don't want to go, a direction that makes you bitter, that makes you sad. But eventually, if you work with your grief, I believe you can let it change us in ways that we want to go. People will often ask me, will my grief ever be over? And the good news and the bad news is I don't believe it will. Your grief will be with you as long as you are alive and as long as you love the person that you lost. But your grief will change. It will not be the same as it is today. It will not remain unbearable. And the last thing this show isn't, it's not a show where I ask you to believe anything. I want to really drive that point home because I will tell you the conclusions that I come to. But when I do, I will present the evidence to you. I will not ask you to believe anything just based upon the fact that I've said it. That's the difference between what I do and maybe what someone else does. So that's what after the storm isn't. Here's what after the storm is. It's going to be honest conversation with me and other people who've been through storms and people who've studied them. It's going to be evidence-based. I'm going to tell you what the research says. I'm going to tell you what my lived experience is. I'll share with you from my experience of talking to almost 500 people who have gone through the storms, of working with parents who have lost children, of working with wives who have lost husbands and husbands who have lost wives. I will tell you where that evidence leads. This is a place where you can be in the wreckage without being rushed out of it. People that come to me because they want something different. They're in one place and they want to be in another place. And that's perfectly understandable. But I got so much of people trying to rush through where they were that I actually recorded a meditation called A Time to Wait. Because I look at nature for a lot of our wisdom. And one of my things I talk about is plant it, not bury. So when you plant a seed, you don't look at the seed the next day and say, why aren't you a seedling? You don't look at the seedling and say, why aren't you a tree? Why aren't you bearing fruit already? Why haven't you flowered? We know that when we plant a seed, it takes time. It takes the right conditions. It takes rain. It takes sunshine for that to become what it's going to become, for that to manifest on what it's going to be. So I was talking with a client just earlier today in the very, very early part of her grief, basically 4 months in. And she's like, I can't take it. I can't bear what I'm going through. This doesn't make any sense to me. That's what we would expect 4 months into the fresh grief of losing the love of your life. That's a normal place to be. So being in the wreckage is where we're going to be sometimes, and that's okay. We need to learn how to weather that while we're going through it until the sunnier days come. So for all three groups from the opening, for people heading into the storm, if you've got a diagnosis or something is coming up that you know that you're going to be heading into a storm, if you're in the middle of the storm, you're going through it right now, or if you're in the aftermath, There's going to be something here for you every week. The other thing this is going to be, it's practical things you can do to weather the storm, practical things you can do to rebuild after the storm. One of the tests I always have when I'm teaching something or when I'm learning something is I ask myself, so what? If someone tells me some theory about something, I'm like, how does this affect my life? What can I do with this? It might be nice to know. There are things that are nice to know that don't affect my life. But if I'm really going to put any effort into it, if I'm going to expect you to come back and listen to this program again and again, you're going to do it because you want to get something out of it. You want something that's going to change your life. And I promise you that is something I will try to deliver to you on every episode. So in that light, let's just have a little taste of that. After I lost Shayna, I looked for all kinds of ways to survive, to get back to where I needed to be. And I realized after a few years that I actually built a framework, that I built four things that I do on a regular basis, on a daily basis, that helped me to build resilience and to go through the storm. So what I said earlier is grief isn't the problem. Stuck grief is the problem. Grief that can't move. So the question is, how do you move it? When everything is broken, when you're in the middle of a storm, you don't need philosophy. You need something to do tomorrow morning. So what I've done is I've taken this framework and I've formalized it and I've built on it over the last 10 years. And I have four practices to help move grief through the body instead of it getting stuck in it. And I call those GEMS, G-E-M-S. The G in GEMS stands for gratitude. Now, this is not toxic positivity. This is not denying that things might really suck in a lot of ways, but this is noticing what is still here while we acknowledge and honor what isn't still here. So this is a practice that I do on a daily basis. I'll go into these in more detail in later episodes. The E in GEM stands for exercise and sleep. These are two sides of the same coin. The body keeps the score. If you don't take care of your body, nothing else works. So exercise and sleep are very important. The M stands for mindfulness or meditation. Coming back to the present moment when the past is heavy and the future feels impossible. I found that if I'm living in the past, a lot of times I'm living in anger. And I find if I'm in anger, it means I'm living in the past. Vice versa, if I'm living in fear, I'm thinking about the future. It's very, very important to try to stay grounded in the now. Because again, the past can be too heavy, the future can be frightening. Mindfulness is our way of building that muscle that brings us back to where I am in the
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And the S in GEMS stands for self-care. Now, this is not bubble baths. This is not going to the spa. This is the stuff that's more routine and maybe even harder. It's learning to say no when you need to say no, to set proper boundaries. It's learning to ask for help when you need help. It's eating properly. It's drinking water. It's going outside. It's all those little things we do to protect ourselves. So these are four things, G-E-M-S. Very simple, nothing earth-shattering here, but also not really easy. So today I want to give you a little sample on this. I want to go deeper in one of these. I'm just going to go on one because that's all we have time for. I'm going to pick the most physical one because this is a health show and because it's the one that a lot of grievers neglect, and that's exercise and sleep. So why does this matter? This is the most literal way to move grief through your body. The body keeps the score, as Bessel van der Kolk put it. If grief gets stuck anywhere, it gets stuck here in the body. One exercise I've seen people do is think about your grief and where do you feel it? Some people might feel it in their chest. Some people might feel it in their shoulders or their neck as a tightness. You might feel it in your head. Grief lives in the body before it ever reaches the mind. Our cortisol level, our stress hormone, goes up. Our sleep can be destroyed. We can't fall asleep. We can't stay asleep. Or it could be the opposite. You might sleep too much. Our appetite can disappear. and we just don't feel like eating, and people lose weight, which is stressful for the body. Or the opposite. The appetite could go out of control, and we might gain a lot of weight. So for me, when it comes to exercise and sleep, what I do, and I've done pretty much every morning without fail since actually before Shayna passed away, is I walk. Now, I used to walk for exercise. I used to walk because I had a Fitbit, and it said that I should get 10,000 steps a day. So I said the only way to do that, my very sedentary job, was to walk. So I mentioned I was on a walk the morning when Shayna passed away. Since Shayna passed away, I've actually increased the length of my walk. I walk about 6 miles. For me, it takes about an hour and 40 minutes. I do that every morning. Unless it's extremely cold or it's raining, I walk every day. So why walking? Well, it's not for the workout, as I said earlier. It's not really training for anything. And it's not even steps for a tracker anymore. I hardly ever even look at my steps. It's something very specific that walking does for the nervous system that almost nothing else does. Walking is bilateral movement. It's that back and forth between the right and the left brain, the back and forth between the right and the left leg, that rhythm that actually helps us. There are some grief techniques that people use. One is EMDR, which is rapid eye movement back and forth, bilateral beats or binaural beats, music going back and forth between the two hemispheres. This bilateral motion seems to really help. So that's one thing about walking. There's also the open sky, the sunshine, the vitamin D. That's been shown to improve mood as much as many antidepressants. It's a time to get away from the screens. It's a time to think without the pressure to fix anything. It keeps me rooted in the present. Now, when I'm on my walk, to be fair, it's always before my workday. Sometimes I think about what I need to do when I get home. The good thing is I can't do it because I'm out on my walk. So it gives me a chance to say, okay, I can't handle that right now. I can't do that thing right now. I'll do that when I get home. But right now I'm going to be in the moment. And actually the exercise piece helps with the sleep piece. A lot of grieving people sleep terribly. And there's some things we can do to improve our sleep. I'm not going to talk about that right now. Maybe talk about it in a future episode. But one of the things that helps is to get tired. Moving your body during the day gives that tiredness somewhere to land at night and help you sleep. It's really ironic. I find that when I exercise, I have more energy, but also when I exercise, I sleep better. So maybe you can do one thing tomorrow is starting with a walk. Maybe it's 5 minutes in the morning. Maybe it's 10 minutes after dinner. In fact, walking 10 minutes after dinner has been shown to improve weight control and also to control our blood sugar. So maybe that's something you can do. So that's one quarter of the framework, and we'll go over the others in future episodes. But I also said I want to make this really, really real for you, right? So based upon what I've said, GEMS, and I went into great detail on exercise, ask yourself this question. Write it down or say it out loud, but just pause here for a second or do it after the episode's over. What is something that your body's been asking you for that you haven't been giving it? And that might be to eat better. That might be to drink more water. That might be exercise, as we talked about. That might be to drink less alcohol. But what's one thing, what's one small thing that you can start doing today or tomorrow? And see if you can do that for a week. Now, I don't want you to choose walking 6 miles because that's not something you're probably going to sustain starting off from scratch. But maybe it's walking 5 minutes after dinner. Maybe it's drinking a couple more glasses of water during the day. That would be a self-care thing. Maybe it's mindfulness. Maybe it's sitting quietly every once in a while for 2 or 3 minutes between meetings, something like that. So think of something very small you can do in one of these categories and start trying to do that once a day. Now, the GEMS framework is, it's not a program. It's not something you do for 6 weeks and you're done. For me, it's become a daily practice. And there's this habits are something that's, I think, really interesting. You know, when it comes to habits, we tend to think a lot of times of bad habits, drinking, smoking, you know, whatever might happen to be. There are also good habits. And I found that, for example, my gratitude practice, at first I had to really work at it. I deliberately wake up every morning and practice gratitude. Think of 3 things I was grateful for. Now it comes naturally. My exercise, my walking. If I don't get to take my walk every day, I get grouchy. I look forward to that time of being able to walk and getting outside and having my alone time, my me time. So this is something that you're going to do for the rest of your life. You're going to do it in the pre-storm stage, which will help build your resistance for when the inevitable storms come. You're going to do it in the middle of the storm. This is something you don't stop doing when you're going through it. And you're going to do it post-storm because it's going to really help, again, lock in that mindset. And we're going to talk in future episodes about things like mindset, about mindfulness, about understanding how our brains work, how our minds work, how our biology works with all that. And this is going to help to lock that in. Because one of the things is we as biological creatures have a negative bias. And this comes from evolution. Evolution says you need to look out for what's wrong because if you don't, it might kill you. So if you're out in a field and there's a bunch of beautiful flowers, right? And there's a lion coming at you. You don't have time to look at the flowers. You need to get out of the way. So your ancestors who ran from the lion, they survived. They passed it along to you. Now, what I often say is our brains evolved to keep us alive. They didn't evolve to keep us happy. So we don't live in a case right now where we usually have physical dangers around us. And we're still always scanning for those things, looking for what's wrong. That's why we have to deliberately train our mind to move toward gratitude, to move toward living in the now, to move toward what the real truth that our internal parts will tell us things that aren't true. So that's where we are. I talked about who I am, why I do what I do, what this show is not, what this show is, and I gave you a little taste of some practical things that we're going to be doing in the show when I talked about my GEMS framework. So let's talk about what's coming up in future episodes and episodes that are coming up very soon. Next week on After the Storm, I'm going to talk about how grief is bigger than you think it is. Most people think grief is what happens when someone dies. And that's true. That's the big storm. That's the one we say, I can't come back from this. This is the one we say is permanent, that there nothing good can come from this. That's the huge test. But there are many little griefs that we go through also. So you may be thinking, listening to this, I haven't lost anyone. This show isn't for me. It most certainly is. Loss is a universal human experience. And I guarantee you, if you're above almost any age, you've experienced some sort of loss. And therefore, you've some sort of grief. If you've ever lost a job, you've experienced grief. If you've ever been divorced, like I have, you've experienced grief. I felt like half of me was gone. Didn't understand the time that was grief, but that definitely was. How about getting a diagnosis, losing your health, losing your identity of who you are as maybe even a healthy person, an empty nester? If you have children and your children have moved out, that's a type of grief. I cried like a baby when my daughter graduated from high school and I realized she would be going off to college and not living with me anymore. How about a friendship that ends without explanation? And there are global griefs, there are collective griefs. It's looking around the world and saying, this isn't the world I thought it was, or looking around your country and saying, this is not the country I thought it was. All of these are grief. All of these are storms. All of these have their own scope. I work with clients who have lost pets, and sometimes they'll be embarrassed to say, I can't believe I'm here because I've lost a pet. This is not a real grief. And people look at them and say, it was just a dog. It was just a cat. No, pets are part of our family, and losing a pet is a very real form of grief. So as we go through coming episodes, we are going to talk about things like internal family systems or positive intelligence, which are ways of understanding our minds and the way ways our mind work. We're going to talk about some forms of mindfulness that we can do, some real concrete things that we can do, small and large, to improve our mindfulness, to bring ourselves back to the now, to be able to reinforce truths that we've come across. We are going to talk about other people who have been through storms, because I find that when we go through storms, a lot of times we feel like it's unique. Like, oh, I've lost a parent or I've lost a child. Well, of course, we all know intellectually that other people have lost parents and children and pets, etc. But it helps sometimes to really hear specifics, because it helps us not only to not feel so alone, to connect to that universal connection, but also to be inspired. When I joined Helping Parents Heal, I thought there's no way a parent who's lost a child could ever be joyous again. I remember very specifically, very early in my grief journey, going to a meeting where there was a woman who had lost a child, and she was so bitter. She was so angry. It had been like 10 years. And before that, I had said, that's going to be me. I'm going to honor my daughter by never being the same again. I was going to hold on to that pain and that anger for the rest of my natural life. But I saw these people who would come through that and who were not only living again, but who were joyous, who could speak about their children in ways where they were proud of them, who had still had relationships with their children who were deceased, who were doing amazing things in their children's names. And I realized that was possible. So by hearing these stories that I will share with you, I hope to inspire you to what's possible, because if one person can do it, another person can do it. If that person could do it, Elizabeth Poisson, who started Helping Parents Heal, or Mark Ireland, one of the co-founders of Helping Parents Heal, or the mother who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving after her daughter passed away, if those people can do those things, you can too. Now, maybe not right now. Maybe you're still in the middle of the wreckage, and that's okay. We're going to stay in the wreckage as long as we need to, but it helps to look to the horizon and see where it is. It's possible that you might go. So every week, we'll cover one storm. We'll talk about someone who's been through it or studied it or both. Or we'll talk about a technique to go through whatever it is you're going through now. And I want to hear from you. If there's something that you want to cover, let me know. Because I want this to be for you. I want this to be something you can actually use that you come back to. So in closing, if anything here landed, I want to tell you where to find me. Of course, you can find me right here on UK Health Radio. After the Storm is also available wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, etc. So make sure you subscribe so the next episode finds you. And I write at Substack. So it's grieftogrowth.substack.com. That's grief, G-R-I-E-F, the numeral two, growth.substack.com. That's where the conversation continues between episodes. You can reach out to me. Other listeners can interact there. So I look forward to seeing you there. You can also find out more about me at grieftogrowth.com. That's grief, the numeral two, growth.com. One last thing I want to ask you. If you know someone who's in a storm right now, please share this episode with them. This is something that we all can do, because I believe with all my heart what Ram Dass said. We are all just walking each other home. I am not here to teach you. I'm not here to convince you of anything. I'm here to walk alongside you. I'm going to share with you the little bit that I know. I may be a couple steps in the road ahead of you. Maybe I can inspire you, but I want to share what I know with you. And I next encourage you to share what you know with others, because you never know how someone else might be struggling, and you never know if this might help them. So back to my tagline, plant it, not buried. That's the whole thing. You might feel right now like you've been buried. You might feel like it's over. You might feel like you're never coming back from this. Your life is not over. You are not over. If you're here, and you are because you're listening, you've got more life to live. You've got more joy to experience. You've got more things to accomplish. Grief isn't what happens when love ends. Grief happens because love doesn't end. I'm Brian D. Smith. This has been After the Storm. I'll see you next week. Thank you for spending this time with me on After the Storm. If today's conversation resonated with you, I'd love to continue the journey together. You can find more of my work at www.grieftogrowth.com. That's grief, G-R-I-E-F, the numeral two, growth.com. Until next week, remember, after the storm is where the healing begins.